welcome to The Sound of Economics. I'm Anya Quinn, bringing you the second episode of this new podcast series from Bruegel, the Brussels-based think tank specialised in economics and economic policy. This is a special edition of our podcast, looking at the results of the UK referendum on EU membership. On the 23rd of June, the UK voted to leave the European Union. The UK government will soon begin the withdrawal process. But it's hard to imagine what the UK's relationship with the European Union will look like. What does this huge change mean for the future of the European Union and for its member states? I'm now going to pass over to my colleague Bryn Watkins. He'll be speaking with Bruegel scholars to get their reactions to the result and their analysis of what it means for Europe.
Thanks, Anya. That's right. I'm going to be talking about the referendum result with Bruegel scholars. Here with me is Guntram Wolf, the director of Bruegel, and Maria de Metzis, who has recently joined Bruegel as a research fellow. We also have Nicolas Véron, senior fellow at Bruegel, joining us by telephone from Washington, D.C. All three have been working on the economic aspects of the Brexit debate. Guntram, Maria, Nicolas, thanks for joining us. Now, Guntram, we're going to begin with you and with a very simple question. What is your initial reaction to the results of the referendum?
Well, I think it is a really far-reaching decision that affects the United Kingdom, the European Union, and in a sense the world. It affects us economically directly, but it affects also the general mood towards establishment, not only in the UK, but also in other countries. I think there will be an instinct in many countries to follow, and we've heard already this morning three party leaders saying they would also want to call for a referendum. And I think it's really this aspect that is quite worrying in a number of countries. I think on the economic side, I would really emphasize the economic repercussions. I mean, we really see that already now pound sterling has been down very significantly. I think it's going to be pretty much unavoidable that the United Kingdom avoids a recession. I mean, it's a country with a twin deficit, which limits monetary policy effectiveness. I think financial industry is going to be very hard hit and it's going to have economic implications, therefore also on the continent. And really what, quite frankly, what matters, I think, the most is the big uncertainty out there. Nobody knows what's going to happen in the next 1 or 2 years.
Thank you, Guntram. So, Maria, this is a far-reaching decision with major implications for Britain and its European partners. What's your initial reaction to the events?
I would certainly agree with Guntram and his sobering facts. I'm still a little bit in a state of disbelief. Although we knew it was going to be a very tight result, I had actually hoped that the result would be quite different this morning, but it isn't. I think the biggest worry right now is uncertainty. Certainly on the economic side, we've seen some big movements in the market this morning that reflect that. It would be important to see what happens next week when the markets go through the initial shock. And as we begin to stabilize on more sort of economically fundamental numbers.
Thank you. And Nicola, you're over in Washington watching this from slightly further away. What's your initial reaction?
Well, the reaction is one of sadness, of course, because I think the chart that summarizes the vote is the one split by eight, and it's a vote of the old against, winning against the young, which obviously is not very promising in terms of economic prospects. So I agree on the uncertainty. I believe that there will be a lot of attention to announcements by financial firms in particular, because they're probably the most mobile and the signals will be very keenly watched. But probably one thing that has to settle is the dust on the marketplace, as Maria just said, but also the dust has to settle in Westminster. And it's not clear that it will settle quickly. To have a sense of the policy implications of the vote, we also need a sense of what sort of government will emerge.
That's very true. There is a lot of uncertainty on multiple levels here. Maria, what does it actually mean for a country to leave the European Union, apart from when Greenland stepped out of the EEC? This has never really happened before. What do we know about the process that could be triggered in the next few months?
That's a very good question. I think it's fair to say that there is some legal uncertainty, given that we've never seen this before. What we do know is the following. The result of the referendum is not binding in any legal sense. It is just a recommendation that goes to the House of Commons. The House of Commons will have to endorse the result through a parliamentary majority. If that happens, then the UK government formally can request to leave the EU. This would happen by triggering Article 50 of the Treaty of Lisbon. And once this happens, so now the UK has already asked to leave, then the EU leaders, without the UK, would have to come together and form a strategy as to how this will happen after that. The timing of all of this, as Nicola said earlier on, is not known. It will all depend on how the British government handles this. But this is the sequence of events as they need to happen.
Okay, so there's a lot of uncertainty about when this is going to be happening, but as the UK does move towards leaving the European Union, essentially there will be a triggering of Article 50, and then the European Council, without the UK, needs to decide how it's going to begin negotiations. Guntram, when it's putting together its stance for those negotiations, what kind of signal do you think the European Council should be looking to give?
Well, I think it would be wrong to frame it in a context of retaliation or, you know, showing the Brits that now they should suffer from that decision. I think that would be a wrong approach. What would be the right approach, it seems to me, is to go back to the core values of the European Union, which are really values of a community of law where we jointly have agreed on certain standards, on regulation, on processes, on ways of dealing with each other, and to treat this really in this context. So there is a formal process of leaving, which is Article 50. Now, once you have left, in a sense, you're really outside, and special deals can be negotiated, but they will need to get the consent of 27 member states and the European Parliament on the continental European side. And I think it would be an illusion to think that it will be very easy to get some special deal for the United Kingdom.
I wanted to add that on this approach, on this punitive approach, not only will it be wrong in my view, but it would also be counterproductive. This is going to encourage others to sort of double think why they're members of the EU. This cannot be the right approach. We have to be a lot more constructive than that. This is a club worth of participation. It's not just the club that the exit of which is very costly.
Nicola, I've got a slightly different question for you about the months ahead. It looks like the triggering of Article 50 and then the formal negotiations, it's going to take some time to begin. But in the meantime, we know now that the UK is almost certainly leaving the European Union. We know the result of the referendum. What do you think the short-term consequences, economically, of the referendum result are going to be?
In terms of the economic results, I mean, the market impact is negative and lots of volatility. We'll see, as Maria said earlier, how it stabilizes after a few days. But at this point, it's not very orderly. It's actually a bit less orderly than I would have expected with this result. The UK is no longer the fifth largest economy last time I checked and in market exchange rates. So the impact is already material if you look only at this sort of indicators. Now, in terms of credit and investment, I think we already emphasize the uncertainty. People are maybe unwilling to invest in a country with so many question marks. And to a lesser extent, of course, than what we saw with Greece, but with the same sort of phenomenon, the magnitude of political risk is likely to act as a deterrent on investment and productive economic activity. So quantifying this is very difficult, of course, but nothing very good.
Guntram, looking at the financial data that's around today, what do you think the short-term impact of the result could be?
As Nicola said, we have had a lot of volatility today. The exchange rate has moved very significantly. We've seen stock markets throughout Europe, in fact, really going down very extensively, 10% in some countries, really. Which is really a major impact. Of course, especially the financial industry is very hard hit. I think the financial firms in particular that are based in London will be anxious to learn very quickly what will happen. I think most of them have now accepted that they will lose their banking passport to the European Union very soon. And so they will start very quickly to think about how much and what kind of activities will have to be moved. So I think, frankly, the financial industry will move very quickly, some of it at least. And on all the sort of more industrial activity, I think international corporations, be it even entities like Airbus, I mean, all of these companies are immediately affected.
Maria, what are the key issues as we go into the specifics of the negotiation in the next month? What is on the table for the UK and other EU states to be negotiating when they're putting together the withdrawal agreement?
Certainly the trade, that would be the first thing to negotiate. But there I think I agree with Gunther what he said earlier on, that we do have an acquis communautaire in Europe, and I think we are going to continue with that. So how this will be negotiated with Britain, I just don't see that changing. The important thing that I'd like to point out is that we need to make a little bit of a differentiation between the Eurozone and the EU here. What I would like to see is I would like the Eurozone countries actually strengthening cooperation. There are some low-hanging fruits that we could have, and they involve things, for example, like the banking union. I would like that to have impetus now and sort of progress with the things that we haven't achieved. And ensuring that other countries that are involved, the other EU countries that are involved, are, they are partners that are willing to remain.
I think one has to differentiate between short-term, medium-term, and long-term. In the long-term, the biggest question is whether the Eurozone might become the EU. In other terms, the presence of the UK to the EU was the anchoring mechanism for the distinction between ins and outs. If you look at it long term, it's not clear how the distinction between ins and outs will evolve in the next, decade or so, or maybe beyond, in the absence of the UK. In the more short term prospect, I mean, Maria described completing the banking union as a low hanging fruit. It is perhaps lower hanging than other things like fiscal union, but it's difficult. We know that, and the positions are well known. Whether they can evolve very quickly as a reaction to the UK referendum, I think remains in doubt. So I would not imagine immediate decisions on this. I am tempted to believe that there will be a lot of stabilization in the first place, and making sure that no other country, whether inside or outside the Eurozone, is tempted to leave the EU right now. So that will probably dominate the news, and it's not really a matter of Eurozone integration. It's more a matter of EU functioning and general direction. So I expect no big clarification for the Eurozone in the immediate future.
Guntram, stepping back a little bit, what do you think is on the table? What are going to be the key things that the UK and the rest of the EU need to negotiate over the next few years?
Well, I mean, there is, of course, the immediate issues that go with Brexit negotiations, which are about really the terms of the divorce, which is simple things, which are terribly difficult, but simple at the end of the day, like things like the EU budget, like the Bank of England's participation in the European Central Bank, and these kind of issues. But these issues at the end are small issues. I think really the more fundamental questions are what kind of trade and investment deal will the United Kingdom and the EU conclude, and even more fundamentally, how will the remainder of the EU evolve? And there I'm quite with Nicolas that in fact, once the UK has left, the non-Eurozone countries only constitute some 14% of EU GDP. That's clearly very small. And having been recently in Warsaw, I also got a very strong sense that Poland may feel to be a clear loser if the United Kingdom is outside of the EU for many, many reasons, but one reason is being outside of the Eurozone. So, being the only bigger country outside of the Eurozone. So I think really it has very profound implications. In the short term, I think what will be quite important, sort of beyond the instinct of institution building, and yeah, we can do some more work on the banking union. I think what will be even more important is signals that build trust. And those signals in some cases involve really Simple things like pushing a bit the business, the economy, doing an investment, public investment program that is worth its name. So that, you know, we really see, you know, some stronger recovery, because the negative implications of the Brexit will be visible. And so we should really counteract that proactively with some counter-cyclical fiscal policy at the short term.
So it's a lot of, kind of complex things to consider there, and it could affect different countries in different ways. We heard about Poland there, non-Eurozone countries, obviously Sweden and Denmark are very interesting in how they're going to react to that. Maria, do you see a chance actually for this to have quite different effects for the countries that we consider part of the EU core and the EU periphery, as ill-defined as those concepts might be?
I don't think that would be very productive, actually. If we start making splits down that way, I think that's going to fuel some of the disengagement of the European citizen. I think at this point we really need the unity. President Tusk used this word this morning. We really need to move forward like one. And, you know, following up from the things that Guntram just said, this is a time for an opportunity. We could use that. We could use it to build on, you know, some of the policies that seemed not quite so obvious maybe yesterday, maybe today they look a little bit more obvious. These fiscal issues, generating growth, opportunities, investments, this will be important for the European citizen.
I think this vote is historic. It is a vital questioning of the EU, if you will. I think it forces everybody to raise their game. Unfortunately, not everybody will. So we'll have the depressing politics of, as usual, in many instances, but I think what we can hope is that at least some of the European leaders understand that something bigger is at stake now, and therefore focus on actual problem solving. So Maria mentioned this when saying that banking union is a relatively low-hanging fruit. Whether it can be grasped as such remains to be seen, and I think on a range of issues we need really leaders to take their game to the a higher level. Whether that means taking the EU to a higher level of integration is a separate question, but in terms of a bit of vision and sense of the common European interest in our next political decisions, I think that's basically the call.
Yeah, there are indeed challenging times ahead. I think that's maybe the only thing we can be certain about. Guntram, Nicola and Maria, thank you so much for these comments. We are going to have to stop there, but there is certainly going to be much more to say in the coming months.
That brings us to the end of this episode. The future of the European Union and its relationship with the UK remains unclear. Bruegel scholars will follow events closely and offer analysis of the economic effects. You can find extensive commentary on the impact of Brexit on our website. Join us next time for The Sound of Economics.